Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 219. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about budget travel, and we do it with the help of Pauline Fromer. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into today's interview, we have a couple news stories for you. We learned this week that a lot of airports are getting free Wi-Fi, which is good news. We learned that American Airlines is going to start charging $8 for that blanket and pillow if you still want it, which is not so good news. That's one of many different ancillary fees that are coming. And we learned the list of the dirtiest hotels, the 10 dirtiest hotels in America. And some of the dirtiest hotels, the comments, and this comes from TripAdvisor, have things like, "I found a crack pipe in my bed," so it's not even just bed bugs. This is a truly horrific list to look at. And most of these hotels are still in business, and at least one of them is in New York City and is $126 a night. So check that out. For more information about all of those stories, check out the show notes and also check out This Week in Travel, which is the weekly podcast of travel news. I'd like to welcome back to the show Pauline Fromer, who has come to talk to us again about budget travel. Pauline, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back. Thanks.
I so enjoyed when we talked last time and the various tips that you gave us. So as soon as we finished that show, I knew I wanted to do this one. And my favorite of all the tips you mentioned was that retreat house in the Upper East Side in Manhattan, the Episcopal Retreat House that you could stay at that was a Getty mansion. So that's the tip.
Yeah, the House of the Redeemer.
Exactly. And that's the tip that I keep telling people, and I haven't had a chance to stay there, but I'm still it's still on my to-do list. So
it's popular, so you have to book it well in advance. Secret is out a little bit.
Things have changed a little bit since you were last on. We've had a global recession. How has that changed budget travel or how you look for deals or your approach?
I think it's made it easier for people to find deals. The problem is nobody can afford to travel anymore, which is why it's so much easier to find deals. What we've been seeing is a shift in who is traveling. It used to be that the boomers were really the biggest travelers. They were the ones taking the most vacations. But right now, they are nervous about their retirement funds. And so we're seeing a lot of folks under the age of 35 unable to get a job and hitting the road instead, just seeing the world, which I think is a terrific response to this crisis.
Sure.
Especially if you're young. I think it will actually help those young folks in the end. I mean, we're more and more of a global community, and I think the skills that you learn and the knowledge you acquire by going out and seeing the world independently will be of great use to employers. So that when they get back, I wonder if it's going to be seen as they've been, you know, scruffily kicking around, or if they've been gaining useful background for the work that they're going to do. I'm hoping it's the latter.
It'll be interesting to see. We still haven't developed a gap year sort of culture in the U.S. like they have in, say, England or Australia or New Zealand.
Yeah, well, we haven't developed a travel culture either. I mean, you look at those.
That's true.
Only 25% or so of Americans even have passports. You look at those nationalities, and they're on the road all the time, partially because they have more vacation time legislated by their government.
Right.
So, anyway.
Now that people are getting more passports, we're seeing that growing because of needing it to get into Mexico and Canada. Are you seeing any sort of shift that, gee, now that I've got a passport, I might as well go to Paris? Or
no.
That's what I was thinking.
I wish I could say I was, but I think, unfortunately, because people are so strapped for cash,
sure,
and because the dollar is weaker in many parts of the world, not so much on our immediate borders, but going to Europe specifically is rougher. Plus, we've seen a big rise in fees for airfares. Airfares are getting tougher, not so much on the surface. On the surface, they don't look any more expensive. But when you add up a lot of the different fees, for example, recently England added to pay for their bank crisis, they are now charging anybody flying out of the UK $130 tax. If you want to have a family vacation in England, that 130 times four, and never mind the strength of the pound against the dollar, it's just not going to be possible for many people because of that additional fee. Argentina just added a visa fee. Again, it's about, I think, $130 there just to get into the country. So there are all these little hidden fees that are making travel not impossible, but harder. You have to research more thoroughly to figure out where you're going to get the best bang for your buck.
I'm trying to plan a trip for podcasters and new media producers going up to Canada from New York City in June, and the inside cabin is only, I think, $450 for 5 days, but the fees are about $200. So that really surprised me. I know they are a lot, but they've gone up, I think, even since the last time I've looked at cruising options. Now, a lot of people look at cruises, as we talk about that, and that's a very popular option. What are you seeing in that space? And I know that's neither your favorite nor my favorite, but let's talk about that one first.
Well, unless you're going to camp out, there is no cheaper vacation option than cruising right now, if you can have willpower, and we'll get back to that. The fact is, all of the cruise lines, when times were good, ordered new ships. Those ships are being delivered right now.
Great big ships.
Huge ships, thousands of cabins, cities at sea.
Exactly.
So there is a glut of available cabin space, and in order to fill it, certain lines have been slashing their prices dramatically. It's not unusual to get a very nice cruise for as little as $40 per person per day. Now, one of the reasons the cruise lines can cut their initial costs so dramatically is they know that once they've got you on board, they've got you. And they make so much money from their passengers once on board that they could possibly just give away these cruises for free. I once talked to Carolyn Spencer Brown of Cruise Critic, and she said that the average cruise passenger spends 25% of the cost of the cruise on the ship, getting drinks, doing special activities.
So that's not even counting excursions then?
That doesn't even, well, that does count excursions.
Oh, okay, okay, then I'm with you.
The folks who go to the casino or the spa spend 75% of the cost of the cruise on board. Yeah. So, you know, it's funny. I was just recently on a cruise with a film crew because we were doing a special about cruising. And our camera guy basically lost money that week. He lost his entire salary on drinks and at the casino on board that ship.
Wow.
He had a good time.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
No, they make some money from me on the excursions for sure, but the casino.
Well, you shouldn't be buying the excursions.
I studied too much math for that, so.
Why are you buying the excursions?
Well, when we were doing some of the trips, we were buying excursions. Some we were doing through shoretrips.com.
Oh, good. Okay. Because I think it's better to look at the outside companies. You usually pay less money that way, and you also travel in smaller groups.
Right.
Because their group sizes are always much, much smaller. The only risk is if you get back to the boat late, you could be left on shore.
Exactly. And I was going to say, the one that we did buy through the ship, we had a tight connection in the port. We weren't there that long. And yeah, if it's their excursion, I know that they'll wait the boat for me or get me back to the boat. But if it's someone else's, bon voyage.
But some of those excursions, I'm sorry, are such incredible ripoffs. I remember reading about one cruise line in Alaska charging passengers $75 to see the Mendenhall Glacier. There is a public bus that goes to the port and goes directly to the Mendenhall Glacier in about 20 minutes. It costs about $1.50. And then once you get to the Mendenhall Glacier, I think you spend about $5 to go to the visitor center and get the same tour. The people who are taking the excursion offered by the ship are paying $75 for.
So. Well, and even better, you found when you were in Jamaica, I remember hearing on your show, yours and your father's, who I understand also knows something about travel. when you were in Jamaica, you found a free option that sounded more interesting than half the shore excursions anyway.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jamaica is a wonderfully innovative community, and I think arguably the most culturally rich in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. And about a good 50 years ago now, they decided that their major selling point beyond their beaches was their culture, and that they wanted people to come and meet the Jamaicans, and that that would bring people back because they're such a friendly, lovely, culturally interesting people. And so they have this program called the Meet the People program. It's absolutely free. They hook you up with somebody who has similar interests to you. So I got to go to a woman's house and cook with her. I learned how to make the national dish of Jamaica, which is called Aki, which is this insane fruit. It looks like a little brain. It's yellow, and it looks like a tiny brain. And you cook it up, and it tastes like the creamiest eggs you've ever tasted. It's absolutely delicious. Huh. And the amazing thing, and these volunteers will take you to see local schools or hospitals if you're interested in those things, or they'll take you to the tourist sites if you just want to go to that famous waterfall in the company of a Jamaican, or the birthplace of Bob Marley with a reggae fan. You can do that too, and it's absolutely free. You don't have to pay a thing to tour Jamaica. It's remarkable.
Now, I assume this is something I would find for various destinations, opportunities like this, in your series of books, in the Pauline Frommer series. Are there other places to find this sort of thing?
Well, a lot of these organizations are called greeters organizations. So if you Google greeters, you will find these types of organizations where folks, local folks who enjoy meeting visitors and touring them around, volunteer. You find it in Japan, in South Korea, in New York City, in Chicago, in Adelaide, Australia, and Melbourne, Australia. It's a growing movement, and it's a wonderful movement.
Excellent. Anything else we should cover on cruising, or otherwise we'll move on here, I think?
Well, I think it's important for people to know how to book cruises, because that's the best way to save. Never, ever book through the cruise line itself. You always want to book through a cruise specialist, by which I mean a travel agent who specializes in cruises. That's because these folks get rewarded by the cruise lines if they sell a lot of cabins, and those rewards they pass along to their clients. Now, cruise pricing is pretty standardized. You're not going to get that much of a break on the cruise price itself, but you will get a big break on other items that really can save you money, like shipboard credits. Many cruises, you can get $100 or $200 worth of shipboard credits, which could pay for all your Mai Tais. Or you might get a free cabin upgrade, or you might get your gratuities waived. On most cruise ships, you pay now $10 per person per day for gratuities, and that's expected, and you should, because these people work incredibly hard, are lovely, and don't get paid enough by the cruise line. So don't ever stiff your cabin steward.
Right.
So work with an agency that really sells a lot of cruises, and shop around between these agencies. Say, what can you get me? How are you going to make this a special deal for me? And you'll be surprised at the variety of deals you can get. I've even seen some cruise agencies throw in free airfare to the port just to get you on board.
Oh, my. Okay. That's a bargain. All right.
Yeah, absolutely.
As we move off of cruises, what destinations are you falling in love with now?
I have become a big fan of Mexico recently. Maybe it's because nobody else is going there.
I was there 3 times last year, so I'm doing my part.
Were you? Good for you. Yeah, you know, they've had a bad year in terms
of
public relations.
Oh, absolutely.
They've had the drug war, which is on the border areas. They've had the swine flu. It's been rough for the Mexicans. But the truth is that the tourist areas, and even some of the non-touristic areas, are as safe as they ever were. And it's remarkable to have such an exotic destination right on our border. I mean, I was in Mexico City, when was it, in October, and we were in front of the main cathedral, which we were about to go in and tour, and there was a shaman standing outside, and he had a line of people waiting to see him, and he was sending up smoke into the sky, and he was blessing people and doing this elaborate ritual right there in front of the cathedral, and you felt like you were thousands of miles away from the United States rather than just hundreds.
Right. Yeah, in that area just between the cathedral and the old Aztec temple, I think you often can find them there, as well as dancers and other things. Yeah, amazing.
Oh, yeah. And it's just such a vibrant city. I fell in love with Mexico City. I mean, every night we went out dancing, and I'm not a big, you know, I don't do that in my hometown of New York. I'm a mom of two, but it was just so much fun, and we met such wonderful people. We were in Tlaxcala, which is not an area most people go to. For historical reasons, actually, it's funny. When Cortez conquered the Aztecs, he did it thanks to the Tlaxcalans. The Tlaxcalans had been the only people in central Mexico who had not defeated the Aztecs, but who had kept them at bay for centuries at that point. They were constantly trying to conquer them. And so when Cortez came on the scene, they joined with Cortez to help him conquer the Aztecs and basically handed over Mexico to the Spanish. And the rest of Mexico has never forgiven them. And so they don't get much publicity. They don't get much tourism from other parts of Mexico. They're seen as not trustworthy to this day. So they're a very different culture within Mexico. And you have these incredible ancient sites. The only spiral pyramid in the world. It goes up in a spiral. And other fascinating, newly discovered archaeological sites that you can see totally alone. Unlike being at Chichen Itza or another famous ruin where you're surrounded by people, here you feel like you're discovering these sites because we were climbing this pyramid and the only other beings in view was this pack of wild dogs. I mean, it was extraordinary.
Okay, that might be a little too isolated at that point, but
well, they kept their distance.
Okay,
they were nervous. They didn't like us.
Well, and the flights right now going down to Mexico, I was just seeing the same flight that I took down to Oaxaca last year is, you know, I think they were normally 2 years ago $500, and now they're half that. So,
yeah, and of course the dollar is very strong. Mm-hmm. So you always use pesos because you're going to get charged much more if you pay in dollars. And you can go to very luxurious resorts in Cancun for very little money. So if you want less of a Mexican experience and more of kind of a, I don't know, international deluxe experience, you can do that in Cancun. And they've really taken hospitality there to some cutting edge. I went to one resort where they've trained parrots to bring messages to guests. So if you want to propose to your girlfriend, you get the trainer to put a note in the beak of the parrot, and then it flies down to your girlfriend by the pool. It's hilarious stuff.
Any other destinations that are growing on your list, especially here with the recession?
Well, I mean, one of the best ways you find deals is you go to places in crisis. I hate to say it, but it's true, and you're also helping these places by going to them. Arguably, the economic crises in both Iceland and Ireland were worse than they were in the United States. The entire economy of Iceland in particular has totally melted down. And so both of these places have lost all their business travel. And so we're seeing remarkable deals. Iceland Air recently had a 3-day trip to Reykjavik where you spent, I think it was $500 for airfare and 3 nights there. Now, it's at the dead of winter, but that doesn't matter so much in Iceland if you're a partier because they have a legendary nightlife with all these cutting-edge dance clubs. And you also get to see the Blue Lagoon, and it's a volcanic caldera, much of it looking like Yellowstone, so it's fascinating to see. The same for Ireland. I was editing Pauline Farmer's Ireland, the book, and literally every month or every week we had to keep lowering the prices in the book as we were fact-checking it because they've lost all their business travel. And even with the weakness of the dollar against the pound and the euro, you can spend less in Ireland by 30-40% than you would have just a year ago.
Hmm. Good news for us and bad news for people who are writing guidebooks.
Yeah. It made my life very rough for a while. And in fact, I'm sure if you look at Pauline Frommer's Ireland, you can still probably pay less than the prices we have in the book because it continued to go down.
Interesting. Anything changed about how you're looking for bargains? Last time you were here, you mentioned some of the aggregators. You mentioned Mobismo and some of those that I had not heard of. Any new players in that space that you're using now that you weren't a year ago?
You know what? It's moving away from that space.
Interesting.
There is an interesting trend because having these aggregators who show the sites so clearly has made it very hard for the airlines to keep their prices a secret, which is how they make money, which is one of the reasons we're seeing this huge uptick in fees for luggage and the like. But one of the best ways now to save on airfares is to sign up for the airlines programs because they're giving special discounts to people who sign up for the newsletters that are not going to show up on those engines, unfortunately.
Okay.
So you got to get yourself on a lot of lists. Often that is the best way to get a good deal now. Not always, but often.
Interesting. And we've also seen some deals with the frequent flyer miles, too, I know, where they've discounted how much you have to pay for it and such, that again would be to their regular travelers.
Right. Well, they make a lot of money on frequent flyer miles. I mean, that's
absolutely
a booming business for them.
Oh, sure.
Anyway.
As well I know. Where are you going next? What are you exploring next?
Well, I booked just last night. I booked tickets to Guatemala.
Okay.
Which I'm very excited about. I've never been. It's going to be our family vacation. A hub, and it's really a remarkable destination. What I'm finding is that you can get two-hour shuttle rides for about $8. Our hotel rooms for the four of us look like they're going to cost about $40 to $50 a night for very nice places. And from what it's looking like, of course, I haven't been there, but I've been doing a lot of research, it looks like a very rich and unusual destination in that there's a lot of Mayan villages that you can visit in the areas that we're going to that are still living very much like they did a century or two ago. You mix that with ancient Mayan ruins and bustling markets of artisans and zip lines and adventure things for the kids.
Uh-huh.
So I'm hoping that it's going to fulfill all of my family's interests. You know, they'll let me do the Mayan village if I promise them the zip line the next day.
And I think that's one thing that we don't always appreciate as North Americans, how old the culture is and how rich the culture is just a little south of us. I know when I was in Oaxaca last year and I was talking to a weaver down there who was using the traditional Zapotec techniques, and he still speaks Zapotec at home, and so his family has probably been there at least 2,500 years.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, we're so used to 300 years is history, so...
No, it really is remarkable. And it's also such an interesting clash of different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
You can see these beautiful colonial churches and cities that rival anything you see in Europe. And yet right outside in a Mayan village is somebody doing a type of weaving that the Europeans never even conceived of. It's a totally different tradition. And then you're going to have a potter who's taken European techniques and designs but given it a Guatemalan spin. And you see the weaving together of those cultures. So, yeah, everybody should consider South and Central America. It's going to be much more affordable because the dollar remains strong. In fact, many in Panama, you pay in dollars. They don't even have their own currency.
Right,
we were considering Panama, too, but it looked like what we wanted to do would require internal flights, and everything there seemed a little bit more spread out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so many riches, and I'm a big fan of Brazil. Unfortunately, they also have a very big visa fee right now. But
right, yes, in retaliation, as I understand, for the fee that we were charging them.
We still do charge them.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, it's hard to argue with fees right now because everybody has concerns about security. I would argue that the fees have not that much to do with security.
Right.
And that we should lower them. I don't think that most people in the United States realize how much more inbound tourism we could be getting and how that could drastically increase the number of people employed here in the United States if we lowered some of the financial barriers to coming here. In Brazil, there are two places in the country where you can get a visa, and you have to apply in person. You have to go to, I think it's Manaus, and the capital, Sao Paulo.
Sao Paulo.
So if you live literally hundreds of miles away, you have to take a plane there. You have to wait overnight, usually. You're not even guaranteed to get the visa. And the number of people who are no longer coming to our trade shows, who are no longer trying to do business in the United States because of this, is immense. It's really short-sighted. But anyway.
As we go to wind this down, so you left us last time you came on with a couple of the gems. We mentioned the retreat center. Any other gems that you found recently that aren't yet discovered or are just getting discovered?
Well, you know, I think alternative accommodations are the way to go in cities around the United States and around the world, and you can find incredible deals in Orlando, for example. The cheapest resorts at Disney World will cost you $79 a night in low season, $99 a night normally, and you have to cram your entire family into a cinder block motel room. These are actually reconverted motels, so they're not that Disney-fied. And you're going to pay $99 a night for that. Or you could be staying in a beautiful, newly built condo with its own pool with two or three bedrooms for as little as $59 a night now. So you can close the door between yourself and the kids. And you'll find these kind of options everywhere, especially Hawaii. Hawaii, because of the financial crisis, has seen a huge drop in the number of people going there. It's partially the financial crisis. It's partially the fact that two of the major airlines that once served it are now out of business. So they've seen a 25% drop. On the island of Maui, there are more condo beds than there are hotel beds. And everybody who bought one of these condo apartments in Maui did it as an investment. They're having to pay mortgages on them.
Oh, yeah.
They can't keep them full. They may use them maybe a month a year, but they're suffering. And prices for condo rentals on Maui and Oahu in particular are plummeting. And these are luxurious places right on the beach. So you want to look at the direct-to-owner sites and play Let's Make a Deal, because these people need to keep these condos filled in order to pay their mortgages.
Yeah, well, do I know, we owned a condo in Maui and Kihei for about 12 hours, but that's another story.
Oh, boy.
Till buyer's remorse set in, and fortunately they have a 72-hour period that you can change your mind in the law on Hawaii.
Well, I'm glad you got out of it, because you might be in trouble now.
It was a lovely place, and it was a lovely beach, exactly. But we realized we like to go to different places, and we didn't necessarily want our kids to think that they always had to go to a 5-star resort. Anyway.
Yeah.
Pauline, thank you so much for coming back on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I certainly hope that we get you on sometime in the future again.
I'd love that. Thanks again.
And thanks for coming. In Internet Resources, I have one resource for you today, and this is one that was pointed out to me this week on This Week in Travel. I know most of you don't listen to both shows, so I'm not too much afraid of telling you about it, and that was something that Sean Keener from Boots and All pointed out, and it's called Oyster, oyster.com, and it's hotel reviews, and it's interesting because they take a lot of different pictures of these hotels that they're reviewing. So it doesn't review every hotel, but I'm, for instance, looking at a hotel in San Francisco, the Laurel Inn, and in this review, there are 220 different photos of the property. So if you're interested in going someplace, especially if it was a big trip, it was a honeymoon or something like that, and you really wanted to make sure that things were going well, this is a good site to check out. So it's oyster.com for hotel reviews. In news from the community, I got some corrections from Celeste on the show on the Marquesas. She says, I am so glad to hear a podcast about the lovely Marquesas. Just a correction. She says another correction. Actually, she corrected me in email that the population was wiped out in the 1870s, as I suspected, not the 1970s. She said, there are places to stay on every one of the islands. If you fly there, flights are 7 days a week. Some are a little rustic, but all are family-run and incredibly friendly. Also, most French Polynesians wouldn't want to consider their country as part of France. We are actually the only official French overseas country, as opposed to a territory, okay? And David wrote in that he liked the show, but he's quite excited about the destination. One quibble with the interview is we said that it was the most remote inhabited islands, and that would be Easter Island. And we're actually going to do a show on Easter Island next week, and during that show we're going to say that it's the most remote inhabited island. So we really said it about both destinations. So clearly we're wrong at least one of the two times, and I think David's right. I think that Easter Island is more remote. And lastly, I heard from David a couple months ago, but had not had a chance to read his letter on the show before. David wrote and said, "Here's another congratulatory letter on your podcast. You really break up the monotony of my day. I sit at a desk from 8 to 5, Monday to Friday, and listening to your shows provides a much-needed respite from this drudgery. I love the variety of places and angles you cover, and only hope that I don't burn through all of your back episodes before I hit the road myself next August. When I discovered your podcast a few weeks ago, I was all set to plead with you to change the theme music. Somehow, though, its earnest, poppy appeal broke through my jaded musical tastes, and I find myself singing it under my breath on my evening commutes. It's great." That's from David in Mount Vernon, New York. With that, we'll start to wind this down. I have a couple things to ask you. One is, if you have not yet downloaded your free copy of the ebook, How to Book Your Travel Online, go to amateurtraveler.com and do that and join the Amateur Traveler mailing list. I hope everyone will do that. And second, if you work for a company that is a travel-related company that would be interested in sponsoring the Amateur Traveler, I certainly could use that because, as I say, this is my day job now, and right now I'm not paying the bills. So that's something that I need to see if I can change. I would like to encourage people to be like Celeste and David and David, who sent us some feedback, both by commenting on the show or by sending email. Comment on the show at amateurtraveler.com or leave me email at host@amateurtraveler.com. Also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X for lots of information, or at Amateur Traveler for just Amateur Traveler news. Also join us on Facebook, facebook.com/amateurtraveler, and help me decide there on the Facebook group where the photo cruise in September or the photo tour in September should go. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not.